I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Last spring, Charles Demers debuted his one-man show Leftovers at Burnaby's Shadbolt Centre. It's gone on to other cities in the country and returns home later this month as part of the Push Festival. New World Theatre is its producer, and Mr. Demers joins me now to tell us about this personal show wherein he recounts coming of age, politically and otherwise. It's moving, especially when he talks in the show about being a new father, his own mother's death when he was a child, as well as the travails of being a socialist in a capitalist world. When I saw the show last year, we were in the midst of Stephen Harper's tenure as Prime Minister. Has Charlie's outlook gotten a little sunnier with Justin Trudeau at the helm? I doubt it has, but Charlie has always struck me as a realist rather than a pessimist. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets to the show. Go now, because they've already added another show and that's selling quickly. Because I think he's not only talented, clever, and funny, but beloved. It's the measure of his success, not only as a performer, but as a person. What shines in this show is Charlie's humanity. I'm not a socialist, and even I was quite moved by it all. Everybody deserves to see this show. Charlie was last on this past fall when his book The Horrors was released. That book, like everything he's done lately, was a smash. The show's at the York Theatre, the 26th through the 30th of January. At Charlie Demers is the Twitter handle. We caught up with Charlie one afternoon last week. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Charlie Demers. Mr. Demers, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Joseph. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. So, how do you describe the process of, because you've performed on television, you've performed on stage as a comedian. What is it like now to do a theater piece like this? Is that much of a leap for you?
It is actually a massive leap in a way that I don't think I necessarily would have appreciated at the beginning of the process. You know, I think a lot of us, you know, think of stand-up comedy as being a tradition from, you know, kind of, if not from within the world of theater, then at least the, you know, the fossil record connecting it to theater is pretty intact. But it's a very different, world with very different kind of storytelling and performance exigencies. And, I've been very lucky to have, you know, Marcus Youssef as my collaborator through the process. Originally, Marcus was going to direct and work as the dramaturg for the show. The dramaturg is basically like something like the editor of a manuscript in the prose process. In the theater writing world, the dramaturg is essentially kind of a substantive editor. But it very quickly emerged early on in the process that Marcus really was the co-creator of the show and certainly a co-writer. And so we've been writing the show together. We share a credit on the script. And he's been able to kind of, walk me through what some of the different expectations are. I think we've been able to include that tension between stand-up and theater as kind of a creative driving component of the show. And I know that tension is at least part of what interested the programmers for the Push Festival, which, you know, who put on a festival that's really about kind of artistic experimentation.
Yeah, and so whose idea was it then that you would, say, take the challenge of talking about yourself, talking about your background, talking about these ideals that you have in how you've become you, essentially, on stage like this? Was this something that you always wanted to do?
Yeah, and I think that Marcus and I had been looking for a way to collaborate for a long time. I'm a long time admirer of New World Theatre as a company, and we had done things before. I've hosted events for them and that sort of thing. But I wrote. I was one of the writers for New World on a multi-company show a few years ago called Community Dinner, but we'd not really managed to find a way to do any work together that was more substantive than that. And what we really got a chance to do with Leftovers was to sort of sit down and do this work together that Marcus and I had been hoping to do for years. So I think if I remember correctly, the sort of the way that it went was Marcus let me know that he was interested in figuring out a way for us to work, and the whole kind of concept of Leftovers was one that I had tried to sort of work out in various different forms. I had tried to figure it out as a book, and I've actually gotten it to the stage of pitching it to publishers about the possibility of doing it as a kind of book-length work. But I think actually that the natural home for it is in performance, and to do it on stage. And Marcus was really excited by the idea. It fits with the kind of stuff that New World likes to do, both politically and sort of formally, and it would just kind of ended up being a great match.
Why is it called Leftovers?
The short answer to that question is because when we started the process, The Leftovers was not the name of a massive, critically acclaimed HBO series. And so we felt like the name was fair game. Hopefully there's not too much confusion around that. I think Leftovers was, the idea was we wanted to kind of capture what we knew would be the ironic sensibility of at least parts of the show. We wanted it to be funny, but we also wanted it to kind of conjure a bit of that feeling of that kind of despair and suffocation that is sort of at the root of the show. Leftovers being the feeling that like the historical and political world in which we all live is the one we've kind of been stuck with. That this is the residue of after a century that, despite its absolute kind of brutality and its horrors, was at least kind of a century in which history seemed often to be driven by ideas of how to make the world a better place, and that we kind of now live in an age where nobody really seems to think that, or nobody genuinely believes it. We certainly believe that there will be better products. We believe that, you know, we believe that our windows will be better at insulating, you know, heat. We believe that our phones will be ever faster and ever smarter. We believe in those kinds of improvements. But in terms of improvements of how we as human beings come together and, you know, live as a society or as multiple societies, everybody's kind of given up on the feeling that things can be improved. We're all sort of in the business of harm reduction. Those are the good guys. I mean, some mm-hmm. people are actively in the business of increasing harm. But I think Leftovers was meant to kind of to conjure that feeling as well.
Yeah, see, I'm a conservative, and I feel the same way. I mean, maybe I'm more nostalgic than conservative, but I mean, I do have this sense of, say, I don't know if despair is the right word or without hope, but I mean, just the way that, you know, I don't know what's going to happen 5-10 years down the line, and that worries me.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I think that the show, I mean, obviously the show will have an extra special resonance for people who come from, like, a left political background, but really the show is kind of about belief and the belief that you get from your family and from your life or whatever, the values that you have, and the moment at which it no longer seems possible that the world around you will ever line up with those beliefs or those values. And I think that people who are religious will see something of themselves in this story. I think people who are like you say, like conservatives of a certain stripe will see themselves here as well. Because in some ways it's about living in this kind of post-belief world, you know, the idea that we've almost moved away from the thought. There used to be a kind of at least a sense that like the world we lived in was the best possible world. Mm-hmm. Now I think people are much more likely to say that this is the only possible world, which is a very different thing to say.
Yeah, and the lives that, say, our parents had, or the trajectories that our parents had, aren't necessarily the ones that we'll have.
No, not remotely. And I think people, as you say, they don't know what to expect, which in some ways is thrilling, and then in other ways is kind of profoundly terrifying. And you know, I think it's an especially acute feeling of terror that people who have children in their life get, that idea that, like, if the world continues to be scarier or more disorienting past the point where we're around, that we've created people that we know and love people who will still be here after we're gone, I think re-raises those questions. And, you know, and the whole kind of thing about fatherhood in the show, and my mother's parenthood as well of me, I think kind of addresses the question of parenthood in a different way than we're maybe used to dealing with it. Because I think a lot of people think, okay, the world is irrevocably messed up, so I'm going to build a family because that's the one little place that I can control, and my family will let me forget about the world. When really it's kind of the opposite. It's like you have a family, and now the world matters more than it ever did.
So what's it like for you to take the stage every night as you do performing Leftovers and relive some of those moments in your life? Because, I mean, I left the theater after seeing the show, and, you know, I was quite melancholy, quite moved by it all, but laughed a lot as well. For you to go through all of that night after night, does that make, say, the process of remembering, the process of memory, does that make it, say, a little easier?
Yeah, it's been one of the sort of byproducts of this whole process that I really wasn't expecting, and that came to be sort of very welcome. It's not even just so much in the performance, but right in the, like, rehearsal and writing processes to take these things. And I had noticed this before, actually. My first kind of sustained piece of writing was a novel that came out in 2009 called The Prescription Errors, and heavy parts of that manuscript, as I think most people's first novels are, were quite, you know, straightforwardly autobiographical, or lifted from my life story anyway. And one of the things I found in that process was I would write things, and I could even be crying as I wrote them, because they were so kind of viscerally a part of, like, my memory and my life. But then as soon as it's in the writing, like, once it's on the page, it's a part of a text now. It's a part of a piece of artwork, and it has to be made to work. And there's an interesting way in which you can stand outside of that pain, because you have to work as an editor, as an author, as a playwright, as a performer. You have to work with the text. And so it's actually, I would say it was hardest in the rehearsals, to be in a large room with just a few other people and repeating these ideas and trying to act in a way that actually captures those emotions. And so sometimes, you know, even today in rehearsals, I caught myself kind of getting a little choked up about a particular idea or a particular memory. But for the most part, it actually is it's a reliving of those things in a way that's kind of empowering and cathartic.
And so what's it like then when you perform this for an audience and the audience gets something out of it that you probably had no idea you could give an audience? I mean, there is some knowledge, or there's some entertainment, obviously, but there's also some therapy to people in the audience who are probably thinking the same things that you are.
I mean, it's an incredibly sort of... it's an incredibly powerful feeling. It's a very kind of humbling feeling. It's a feeling that I'm a little bit, I'm hesitant and a little afraid of, because I'm used to working in a medium, stand-up comedy, where all I have to do is make the audience laugh. That's the one thing I have to do. Anything else on top of that is gravy. And it's great to get to do stand-up and talk about ideas that mean something to me, or to get to talk about my life in a way that's meaningful, or where I feel like I'm sharing things. But it's also really, it's really easy to gauge how much success you've had in stand-up comedy, because it is how much the audience is laughing, really. And so in some ways it's really terrifying to now be working on a project where success isn't that easy to identify, where there's an ambiguity. But it's also kind of thrilling to allow myself to, you know, go for a reaction that's not necessarily the laugh, or not necessarily the laugh every time. And that's definitely another idea that we've actually integrated into sort of the text and into the performance of the show, is, you know, how is Charlie on stage, who's, you know, who's used to being in the stand-up comedy clubs and is, like, doing this theater show that for him is a kind of big break into respectability and legitimacy, how is he faring with all of the, you know, the new dimensions of the work that he's not only allowed to do, but kind of expected to do if he's doing theater.
Well, were you at a point in your career where you were looking for legitimacy? I mean, you've had great success as a comedian, as a performer, as a writer, you know, a writer of books even. I mean, was that something that you were really looking for?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I mean, I think like anyone, I have moments where I feel okay about where things are at, or you have moments where you feel like I want something more, I want to do something different or deeper or higher, or what, you know, whatever sort of metaphorical way we have of processing these things. I also think it's really useful for humorists to work in ways that aren't just humor driven, to remind us of what we love about working in comedy, and like remind us of what's profound in comedy and important in making people laugh. It's funny, people who could never make anyone else laugh are very quick to kind of dismiss it as an easy, crude, you know, lower form of expression.
Frivolous,
exactly. But I also think that sometimes we comedians do the same thing, and you know, it's in this case, I would say that I've definitely gotten something lasting out of the process, to be able to say, sorry, I'm trying to articulate this in the right way. I feel like my artistic practice has been enriched in a way that it wouldn't have been by just putting in the same number of hours doing more stand-up shows, for instance.
Yeah.
I feel like I've learned things about how I relate to an audience, why I want the joke, why I feel more comfortable with the laugh than some other things, and like learning that it's okay to get something else out of an audience, or do something else for an audience.
So what's at the one of the aspects of the show that I found rather interesting was this look into your political thinking, because it's not something that you came to overnight. It's something that you've seriously thought about, and not only thought that this is the side of the aisle that I was going to sit, but beyond that, you wanted to understand what was on the other side of the aisle, which I found just terribly interesting. So where are you in terms of how you think about politics today? Because, I mean, a lot has changed in the country in the last year or so, and you work out how you feel politically about certain issues in this show. Are you filled with the same sort of despair, the same sort of malaise that you are about life in general when you think about politics?
Yeah, it's a really well, one thing that I will say, and this is a very kind of atypical for me bit of kind of encouraging feeling and if not optimism, then at least a kind of like sense of feeling energized by this thought, which is that I actually feel like right now Canada is probably one of the most interesting places in the world to be thinking about politics, acting on politics, I feel lucky to be here, and I don't mean that in the sense of, you know, I think everything's better here, and I think everything's, you know, but...
It's the greatest country in the world or something like that.
Yeah, I've never really gone in for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I do feel like at the top of the list, I think the kind of reorientation of the country around its relationship to settlerism and the dispossession of indigenous peoples and the resurgence and rights and power of those indigenous nations, I think that what's happening in Canada around that question is one of the most compelling political stories unfolding anywhere in the world today. I think we're all, I think it's an honor to be alive right now in this country at this moment in a very genuine way, because it's rare that you get to see history actually changing, power dynamics actually shifting, and I genuinely believe that we're in the middle of that process here. I also think that there are certain things about Canada, and sometimes they're the things that are most infuriating about Canada, like the kind of the self-righteousness or the that feeling of like smug superiority, particularly in relation to the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
That there's something about this moment that even is making me feel a certain kind of fondness for that, at least as an inclination that people have, at least as something to build on. Like, I think, you know, it's, so we're in Canada and nobody can stop themselves from patting ourselves on the back about how wonderful we are to the Syrian refugees. And that's really grating on the one hand. On the other hand, it is kind of great that we live in a place where people are rushing to unduly congratulate themselves on how welcoming they are to Syrian refugees, as opposed to, like, in the States or in Europe, like, competing with each other for how little they want mm-hmm. to welcome refugees, how few they're going to let in. I think that for a lot of socialists my age, in our 20s, we looked to Europe as a kind of, as the hope.
Mm-hmm.
There were two places we could look. Latin America, where all of these things were happening with the Venezuelans and Ecuadorians and Bolivians, where this kind of new wave of radical social democracy was being experimented with. And I think that I still think that that's really interesting, although the collapse of commodities prices in the last few years has really pointed up what I think were a lot of the weaknesses of those models, like in Brazil and in Venezuela. On the other hand, we look to Europe, I think. You know, when George W. Bush was the president, there was a tendency to kind of look at like a place like France, a place like Germany, and think, oh, you know, if only we could be more like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the last few years, we've really seen pointed up the huge limitations in the European systems. And a big, big part of it is their ethnocentrism. It's their racism in some cases, open sort of chauvinism. The fact that their polities are nation states, that they really are built around a kind of ethnic and social homogeneity that the continent is having a really hard time dealing with. And I think that Canada, which I want to be clear, I think is a deeply, a nation forged in colonialism and deep, deep-seated racism. Like, I'm not in any way trying to make the case that we don't have those issues here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we do define our political world in a different way, and in a way that pretty far into the mainstream, and even onto the right side of the political spectrum, I think people like to believe. I think we like to believe in that kind of pluralistic idea, a more kind of a less ethnocentric politics. I mean, obviously with massive exceptions. So because of those things, I think that Canada is a really interesting place to be looking at politics, to be thinking about politics in 2016. In some ways, the questions bound up in the show, you know, we developed the show, as you said, with Stephen Harper in power. Mm-hmm. And we were in a place of, like, deep, desperate, dark despair. And we could count on our audience feeling that way as well. Like, it was just a broadly shared feeling that, like, things had never been this bad or that everyone was terrified. And the fact that those things have been negated or reversed or even tempered by the election of Justin Trudeau, on the one hand, makes the show a bit more challenging. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, I think actually makes the show a lot more interesting, because really it's even greater despair that the protagonist who's based on me should be feeling, because in some ways socialism has been even more roundly rejected, because here we were being devastated by the right for 10 years, and in the end, it's not the left that saved the country. The left was totally beside the point in terms of ending Stephen Harper's reign, and really, it's middle-of-the-road liberalism that rode in on the white horse. And so I think in that way, the questions posed by the show are actually more interesting, because they're deeper. It's really easy to say, I disagree with Stephen Harper, and I think we need to build a world that's completely different from the one that he's building. It's posing that same thing about Justin Trudeau is way more complicated, and I think ultimately a much more nuanced and compelling set of questions to ask.
Charlie, I can't wait to see the show again. It's a very fine achievement, and it's a moving show, and I highly commend people listening to us to do the same and go and get tickets for it. Thanks for this. Break a leg.
You are, as always, too kind to me, Joseph. I really appreciate it, and thank you so much for having me back.
The show is called Leftovers. It's at the York Theater the 26th through to the 30th of January. Visit pushfestival.ca for tickets. Charlie Demers joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunton.